Welcome back to RBKD. It is a hump day edition of RBKD. Oh, I take that back. Got to make correction. It is a old school hip hop hump day, a way back rap Wednesday. And since I'm an Astros fan, got to make it a a Ric Flair Wednesday as well. Got to get you pumped up. Got to get you ready to go. We got a ton to get into on the show. We'll start with the Astros' very dramatic comeback win versus the Boston Red Sox. We'll get into that and some of the details of that matchup. Also, on the other side, too, on the National League side, you also had high-quality drama. Great night for Major League Baseball. Great night for Major League Baseball. There's no getting around. That was a fantastic night for them. We'll get into all the stats and all the drama and all the headlines. We also got lots of Longhorn football to discuss, so we'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. The Associated Press apparently named their mid-season awards for the Big 12. We'll get into it. All right, we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll do a little Baylor tease, just a tease as to what Texas could be seeing when they go up against Baylor after the bye week. Got a long time, that's why we're just teasing it. Got a long time before we start breaking down Baylor. We'll get into some of the items, the news notes and nuggets you need to know about the Bears, the Longhorns' next matchup. We'll get into that a little bit. Also, among Cowboys fans, there's a bit of, there's a beef going on between Cowboys fans and Pro Football Focus. And it centers around Trevon Diggs. We'll talk about that, all right? Because Cowboys fans are really, they're hyped now, and they should be. Their team is legit. They're a Super Bowl contender. We've talked about it. My man E. Hogan, he's even admitted that he's going to start now training for the walk to Dallas. Just he doesn't want it to catch him by surprise. Remember, 20 years ago on the Austin Airwaves, he had an epic rant, all-time great rant, and it's proved to be, it's proven to be correct, an accurate rant back then, that he thought Cowboys are never going to win the Super Bowl with Jerry Jones as the owner because he was such a fuster cluck. You know what I mean? That it was never going to win another one. And for 20 years, he was right on the money. But now, the football gods, they may want E. Hogan to make that walk. So they got to win the Super Bowl. They can't just get there. They got to win it. But E. Hogan now has watched enough Cowboys this season to believe that now he's going to start. I heard him talking about walking around the golf course. He's going to start reaching out to some of his friends along the way, some of his acquaintances along the way to Dallas so that maybe he can chart out the course. Oh, this is going to be huge. So we got to, you got to be hoping that the Cowboys win the Super Bowl just to see E. Hogan walk to Dallas. That's going to be epic. So anyway, we're a long way away from that, but that's how serious people are about the Dallas Cowboys these days. Haven't been that serious about the Cowboys being a Super Bowl contender probably since, was that 2014, I believe? Was that 2014? Was that the year of the Dez caught it? Well, at least they thought the Dez caught it. I believe that was 2014. That may have been the last time Cowboys fans were this pumped up and excited, and they should be. So we'll get into the beef going on, all right, between the Cowboys fans and Pro Football Focus. That's pretty interesting. Also, there's a trend developing with the Cowboys defense that we got to get into, and we'll talk about that too. Also, coming up later on the show, we got several not off the record topics. So maybe we'll have two off the record sessions. Maybe we'll have one at 4:45. Maybe we'll get into another one at 5:45. But Jim Mora, the famous Jim Mora, will be the topic of one of them because it's a famous anniversary for him. And then we had one of these yesterday. We have another example of the bubble guts affecting a professional athlete. It's happened again. It happened yesterday. When we talked about, it happened Monday Night Football, A.J. Brown admitted that he had some Chipotle and it didn't sit right. Does Chipotle ever sit right? Let's be honest. It wasn't sitting right with him. And there were reports before the game that he wasn't going to play versus the Bills. He wasn't going to be available because the bubble guts, he was, as I call it in my household, shooking.
Shooking?
It's a combination of two words.
Oh, I see.
And one is puking. Yeah. So he probably had a lot of shooking going on.
I'm sure everyone can figure that rest out for us.
Yeah,
not spell
exactly.
It out.
So when that's happening, I mean, that's nothing you can do. Not going to be able to play a football game. But he did. Had 7 receptions for 91 yards. So he was able to fight back the Chipotle, the curse of Chipotle there. But another professional athlete been affected. And this time it has, how about this? On a old school hip-hop hump day, way back Rap Wednesday, there is a hip-hop connection. to the professional athlete who was adversely affected by the bubble guts.
Do tell.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah, it's coming. That's going to be good. Yeah, see, I didn't even plan that. That just happened, boom. Just, you know, out of happenstance, if you will. All right, so we'll get to that. That was only part of our off the records. That'll be at 4:45, 5:45. And coming up a little bit later on, also, Sam Ehlinger has been activated as the backup quarterback to the Colts. So we'll get into a little bit. We talked about that. We mentioned it yesterday, but we'll dive deeper into that coming up, too. And, oh, there is a landmark accomplishment that we must acknowledge on the show, in the sports world. Something that's never, ever happened in the history of, really in the history of modern sports in America. It's never happened before. Never. We'll talk about what it is. And it's important. It's important to every sports fan. Something every sports fan needs to know. It is a changing of the times. It's marking a changing of the time, I should say. So we'll get into that coming up a little later on. We got a ton of stuff to hit. I'm excited because, of course, go Astros! All right, the Astros, who used to be the Lastros. Hell, most recently, after the cheating controversy, the Disastros. But now, you can kiss my Astros. Because the Astros with a great win. It was dramatic in a lot of ways. We'll talk about, I'll give you some of the stats because the stats are just staggering. But let me just say this as an Astros fan. The Astros got no business tied with the Red Sox right now. No business. And I know they are because they got a lot of testicular fortitude and they're showing a lot of grit. I mean, that the fact that they were able to score 7 runs in the ninth inning, which tied for the most ninth inning runs in any game in postseason history. But it is also the most in a playoff inning period for the Astros. So the most runs they've scored ever in any playoff inning, but it is also the most ninth inning runs scored in a postseason game in Major League Baseball history. So you got to give the Astros props. They did not quit. They showed a lot of grit, and that's, you know, what did Rudy T say? Never underestimate the heart of a champion. I know they some people say they cheated to get that championship, but still. Technically, they are champions, so never underestimate the heart of a champion. Jose Altuve now hit the home run. He hit the tying home run in the eighth. By the way, for Jose Altuve, now that puts him also in rarefied air. He now has 21 playoff home runs. That is the most for any Astro in franchise history, but also the third most all-time in playoff history. But here's why I say the Astros had no business being tied with the Boston Red Sox. I'm happy they are. But how about this stat for you? Because Zach Greinke, as a starter in that game, a lot of Astros fans, including myself, you know, praying that he'd be able to make it through, I don't know, a 3 innings, maybe. Because the Astros, even in the, maybe if you go all the way back to the start of this series, game one, and then including even game four, the Astros starters have been able to make it through 6 2/3 innings combined in 4 games with an 18.9 ERA. and how about this stat? There's a ton of great stats to get to, but this, I think, is the most eye-popping as to why the Astros are really lucky to be tied, and now it's a best of 3, and they got 2 games at home. The Astros set a record for the fewest outs recorded by starting pitchers in the first 4 games of a series, including the only teams to play at least 4 games in the series. So all they had was 20 outs by the starters. The prior fewest had been 30. So the starters have given them nothing. I just gave you the ERA. It was 18.9 ERA combined for those 16 2/3 innings by the starters. The relievers, they delivered. I mean, they came to play in game 4. I mean, if not for the 5 relievers that combined for 7 2/3 shutout innings, the Astros are SOL. Christian Javier pitched 3 scoreless innings. He had the bulk of it, but Brooks Raley chipped in. Kendall Graveman also a part of that. And in this series so far, the relievers who have pitched a little over 28 innings, they have allowed 3.49 ERA. That's been the difference for the Astros, at least that their bullpen, which is now taxed. They've overextended that bullpen, and that the question is now, do they have enough to be able to finish this series against the Red Sox? And the Red Sox have been, I mean, I'll give you the stats about them. I mean, Boston they've been bombing the Astros. They've been bombing the pitchers, not just the starters. They were the first team in Major League Baseball history to have double-digit hits in six straight playoff games. And, of course, the Astros reported that. They hit 10 home runs off the Astros in the three prior games to Game 4, including Game 4. So they have been able to get to the Astros. They've been able to get to the bullpen early, and that's been in every game so far in the ALCS. They've been able to get to them early in the first, because without Lance McCullers, who gave them, in the ALDS, gave them six innings in Game 1. He gave them four innings in Game 4. That was clutch. If you'd have had McCullers here in this series, it'd be a entirely different series altogether. You didn't, so your starter gave you 2 2/3 innings in Game 1 of the ALCS, gave you one inning in Game 2, gave you 1 2/3 in Game 3, 1 1/3 Greinke gave you in Game 4. It's been brutal. But your lineup is so prolific and it's so talented that, you know, you've been able to have that ninth inning like you had, and Altuve was able to spark that offense in the eighth inning when he hit that home run. So you got enough star power. You got enough in that lineup, and it's so talented. It's keeping them in it, but if starting pitching and pitching is, you know, supposed to win, the deeper you get into the postseason, Astros fans are going to be living on the edge, and the Astros are living on the edge. Framber Valdez will pitch Game 5, and Chris Sale, I believe, is going for Boston. So they're going to need Framber Valdez to give them, and I hate to throw out, if he can give them five innings to try to relieve some of the pressure off the bullpen, that'd be great. That'd be asking a lot considering what we've seen so far from the Astros starters. Probably be asking a lot for him to get five quality innings. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't have pulled the guys early. They just, without Verlander and, you know, no Lance McCullers, the Astros starters really don't present much. Can't really lean on it. So I understand exactly what the Astros are doing. But the theater, all right? The theater was great. It's great drama down the stretch. Boston got, and just to tell you the difference here, Boston got five. They've gotten five or more innings from a starter. In three straight games. And the Astros, for the third straight game, their starter didn't even make it out of the second inning. That is that is a deep contrast there. So in terms of how both of these teams are going to try to win this series. But the Boston Red Sox, they've had the more well-rounded team lately, but the Astros can close, man, and that's what they need to do coming up. I'll give you some of the freaky, crazy stats, because there are a bunch of them. And one of my favorites about the Astros is, you know, they've been clutch when they've had two outs. Because that basically, Houston has scored 36 runs so far this postseason when they've had two outs. So 36 two-out runs. That's the most by a team through eight games in a single postseason. overall record for a single postseason number of two-out runs is 59 by the Dodgers in 2020. So, but 36 is, it says that, you know, this team, they don't waste at bats, and they put a ton of pressure on opposing pitchers, even when they're down in the count. And the one thing about the Astros, that's why that lineup, it pays off. I mean, it's so deep. They're dangerous at almost every level of that lineup. Here are a couple other freaky stats before we move on. And then I know some people want to talk about the home plate umpire. I'll give you a stat about that in a second. And of course, you know, the terrible calls either way. And I know some Red Sox fans are probably saying the Astros wouldn't have even been able to have that ninth inning that they did, that seven-run ninth inning, if not from a little help from the home plate umpire. I get that. And we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. But here are some stats that are just crazy. The Astros now have scored at least five runs in seven of their eight games in the postseason. It's tied for the most games with five or more runs through eight games in a single postseason. I gave you the stat about the Astros setting the record for the fewest outs recorded by starting pitchers with 20. And, hell, I got to tell you, it's through the first four games, but I guarantee you through five games, Framber Valdez, he may not fare much better. So, you know, they could end up setting the record through five games, too. Also, the seven runs that the Astros scored in the ninth inning or later was the most in their franchise history, and for any inning in their franchise history, but also it was tied for the most in the Major League Baseball playoffs history for the ninth inning. So, set a lot of crazy, freaky records. Congrats to the Astros for tying it up. They got a lot of work to do because right now, just watching this series, see Boston Red Sox look like a more well-rounded team. And right now, the Astros are, you know, they got a lot of luck, a lot of luck on their side. They got a lot of experience, of course, because they've been here before. They got a lot of talent, too. They got a loaded lineup, but the pitching is, it's struggling. It's just the starting pitching is struggling. Their relievers have been great so far in the ALCS, but they can't keep that up for, then if they go to seven games, it's going to be tough on that bullpen if they don't relieve some of the pressure. Framber Valdez can do that by trying to take it 5-6 quality innings. We'll see if he can do that in game five for the Astros. Speaking of quality, if you want some real quality, you can go see my friends over at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to Wifey about what she wants to do. She's got a birthday today, so happy birthday to Wifey. And we were talking about going to Steiner Ranch Steakhouse this weekend because Steiner Ranch Steakhouse is one of those places. It makes every occasion feel like a special occasion. And that's because my friends at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse, they do an amazing job. They're synonymous with exceptional style and impeccable standards. That's because the Steiner Ranch Steakhouse team is an extraordinary group of men and women. And now is your chance to join this all-star team at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse. They're hiring at all positions, including managers, hosts and hostesses, also line cooks as well, waitresses and waiters. So all you got to do is contact my friends at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse at 512-381-0800. That's 512-381-0800. You can contact them with your employment inquiries, also your contact information. And my friends at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse, of course, are paying competitive wages at all positions. And it is, of course, one of the great restaurants here in Central Texas. I think it's the greatest restaurant here in Central Texas. So if you want to work for the best, my friends at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse are just that. So give them a call, like I said, at 512-381-0800 if you're interested. SteinerSteakhouse.com is the website. You also can make employment inquiries there as well. And you can submit your contact information and resume there as well. That's Steiner Ranch Steakhouse. It isn't just a steakhouse. It's an experience. So experience it for yourself today at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse. All right. We'll talk some. We'll get back to talking some Astros a little bit later on. And we'll get some updates on tonight's contest, too. One of the things that's interesting about like this time of year, and you got so many different sports going on this time of year. Right now, officially, the NBA has started. Got the NBA season going on. Of course, we're in the middle of college football. Got, you know, probably, getting to a third, I guess, of the NFL season. I mean, it's really one of those great sports times of year on the calendar just because there's so much happening. And I was reading an article in, where was it? I believe it was the Associated Press, actually, could have been where it was originally from. But it actually pointed out that there was history made, all right, in New Jersey as it relates to sports betting. New Jersey has actually become now the sports betting capital of America. It's taken over Las Vegas. It took it like 3 years of being legal there, and now there's more money being bet on sports in New Jersey than in Las Vegas. Didn't take it very long at all. I mean, Las Vegas has been the sports betting capital of America, maybe the world, for years. And if you're talking about illegal sports betting, maybe it still is. We're talking about the legal sports betting. So here's the number. So since June of 2018, that's when the landmark Supreme Court case allowed for legalized sports betting in New Jersey. And New Jersey now, they took in more than what they call the sports betting handle, the total amount wagered. The sports betting handle there reached $1 billion in September alone. So they got to $1 billion in sports bets in the month of September in New Jersey. That is the first time that any state has reached $1 billion in sports betting revenue in just one calendar month. The start of the NFL season helped it. start of the NFL season, September, boom, of course. start of college football season, that helps us. Football is one of the driving forces, right, behind sports betting. And, you know, now you have all of these sports happening at once now. You got the NBA going on, Major League Baseball playoffs, college football, NFL. I can almost guarantee you that October, they're going to break the September record that they had for, you know, having $1 billion wagered in just 1 month. So it's one of those things where it's becoming way more mainstream. They said their internet gambling is up 40%. Their casino revenue is up 30%. But it's more about the sports betting angle of it. New Jersey sports books have collected $7 billion in bets since the start of the 2021 year. $7 billion in 9 months. Now, a lot of that is because this is why New York is probably going to decide to legalize sports betting really soon. And they're going to expedite that process because a lot of the people from New York are just going over to New Jersey, you know, crossing the state line and spending money. And New Jersey's making a ton of money. I believe they've made $169 million just off the tax revenue of legalized sports betting since June of 2018 or whenever they officially legalized it. And they are one of 28 states currently with legalized sports betting. And Florida, Maryland, Wisconsin, Nebraska already have legislation in the works. No, Texas is probably not in that conversation. I know some people in Texas have been trying to push that conversation along. I don't know if it's happening. Texas is pretty conservative when it comes to that stuff. But the tax revenue is phenomenal. They said sports books have made $1.4 billion in revenue since in Jersey alone, just in that state, since they legalized it. So they only got nine places where you can, nine casinos and three racetracks. And the rest of it is online betting and gambling. In terms of physical locations, they only got nine places where you can physically go bet, like physical sports books. Everything else for them has been online. I mean, that's the future. Everybody knows. So just throwing it out there. That's the landmark historical, just historical change, kind of the shift that you should notice that basically New Jersey has become the sports betting capital of America. It is no longer Las Vegas. And honestly, Las Vegas is going to fall to third as soon as New York legalizes sports betting. It'll be third. Crazy. Times, they are changing. All right, we'll come back. When we come back, we'll get into, well, you know what? Let's talk some Texas football on the other side. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll talk about the Texas defense a little bit, maybe get into a little bit of the Baylor tees, but we haven't talked about the Texas defense a lot. A lot of criticism that has been heaped on the Texas offense the last couple of days. We'll talk about the Texas defense. I was really complimentary of the defense. At least they made some changes, some adjustments. We'll talk about some of the bright spots of what we saw versus Oklahoma State on the defense side of ball when we come back. All that and more right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
Yeah, go like this. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry.
Welcome back to RBKD. It is a Way Back Rap Wednesday, a old school hip hop hump day. My man John Reichel doing a great job, as always. Starting off with a little Outkast. Nothing wrong with that. That is a great way to start. Matter of fact, we basically started with two Outkasts because the opening of the show is also Outkast.
It's true, yeah. Our intro, if y'all are curious, is Roses by Outkast. Mm-hmm. And this is Ole Miss Jackson, Outkast, 2001.
Times. Yeah. No, I mean the original AT Aliens. They were funky, weird, and strange, and beautiful all at the same time.
We loved them for it.
Yeah. So we'll be playing. My man John's gonna do a little mix, some old school, and then maybe mix in some newer school, but not the newest school. So that makes sense, right?
Right, exactly. We normally strive for the 80s and 90s in terms of our rap game, but we'll stretch it to like 2000s and maybe 2010s if we're feeling dangerous.
Ooh, I like that. That was still good years for me. I still was having a good time back then.
Yeah. I hope so, and I hope you're still having good times.
Meaning like partying and like still hanging out in the club.
Oh, I see.
Where I would be, you know, jamming some of that music you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nowadays, Robbie, when I'm jamming the new music, I'm mowing the yard. doing yard work or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like when I jam new music back in the day, you know, I'd be like, oh no, I'm headed to the club, I'm doing something, you know, something cool now. I don't do anything cool and listen to music.
Lawn.
I'm mowing the yard, you know, watching film. It's not anything sexy like back in the day. You can used to actually seem like you were, like the music was a soundtrack to something really cool you were doing.
Right.
Because back then, you know, if I'm playing in the league, you know, I'm headed to practice or it's game day or, you know, I'm going to the club, whatever it may be. And the music's like the soundtrack to your life. You know, when you're just doing yard work, you just take
notes. It's hard to feel like a baller when you're mowing the lawn.
No, I still feel
filing
good.
Filing your taxes.
But yeah, exactly. Like, it's not the same ballerific feel that you usually get. So we'll be mixing in some newer jams. Also, since it is a way back Rap Wednesday, old school hip hop pump day, Snoop Dogg, we need some Snoop Dogg. It's his birthday.
It's his birthday?
Snoop D-O-double-G. It's his 50th, I believe.
Wow, congratulations there, Snoop.
Yeah, it's Snoop Dogg's 50th birthday. And so we got a,
at least a few.
So that kind of fits. It fits old school hip hop. And Snoop Dogg, I believe he's still, I don't know if he's still currently making albums, but he does like get featured. I think he's part of that Super Bowl halftime show.
He's done kind of like that thing that Shaq has really done where he's made himself a personality and now he's like, oh, I'm Snoop Dogg. I'm now on this television show. Oh, I'm in this commercial.
Oh, no, he did the show with Martha Stewart. I'm talking about in terms of making music.
He's one of those features.
Yeah, like he's like, oh, Snoop Dogg is on this.
I got Snoop Dogg on my album.
Yeah, he's not making albums
anymore.
He doesn't
have to anymore.
He doesn't. No, but that's, I always say rappers and wrestlers are very similar that you can't wrestle, you know, for a long time because once you become 50, like my man Mark Henry, you see he's transitioning, right? He's done movies now. He's doing, you know, now I think he's doing like executive work with the new wrestling corporation he's with. You got to transition. Like every wrestler wants to be The Rock. Every wrestler wants to be The Rock. John Cena's trying to take that route. That is the route now. He has paved the path. And every rapper, I know it sounds crazy, every rapper wants to evolve to Will Smith in the end. Like, that is the goal. The goal, ultimately, because you can't rap when you're 50. Nobody wants to hear about you, you know, hanging out at the club, doing drugs, selling drugs, whatever you're bragging about, flossing, whatever it may be, at 50 years old as a grandfather. It just ain't cool. Nobody wants to hear about it. They're moving on to younger people, period. And that's why, as a rapper, you have to transition, right? You have to, like Snoop, right? He's hanging with Martha Stewart now. Now he's got some family-friendly stuff. Look at Ice Cube. Ice Cube used to be NWA. Now he's making family-friendly programming. Now he's got Big Three. You can't be your rap shelf life. It's kind of like the shelf life of a, you know, a pro athlete or a shelf life of a wrestler or a shelf life of a stripper. It ain't long. You got to transition it somehow. You got to use that platform to transition to something else because you can't be a stripper when you're 45. Nobody's going to tip you.
Or if you're 50, like Snoop just turned. Happy birthday there, Snoop.
I know I mixed up my analogies, but you get my point. Stripping, rapping, it's all the same. You can't do it forever. You got to transition going to something else. And Snoop's done that really well.
Yes,
he's done
a
really good job of that because now you know Snoop for all kinds of stuff. But he is part of the Super Bowl halftime show. It's going to be Snoop Dogg, Eminem, actually. That's a random tease. Eminem's going to be a part of our Off the Record later on. Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar.
I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, it'll be the first. In my opinion, it's the first official main headline act of the Super Bowl that's a hip-hop act. I know Black Eyed Peas did it, but nobody really knows what the Black Eyed Peas are, okay? As Robert California once famously said, the Black Eyed Peas are hip-hop for people who hate hip-hop. They are pop for people who don't like pop. And they are rock for people who don't like rock, right? If you don't like any of those genres, then the Black Eyed Peas is perfect for you because nobody knows what the hell they are. Nobody knows. So some people would say they are hip-hop act, but I disagree with that. This is going to be good. So anyway, random conversation there. So we'll get some Snoop Dogg on a way back Rap Wednesday for you coming up a little bit later on. All right, let's talk Texas defense. First of all, I do want to give some props to Pete Kwiatkowski for new creative adjustments and wrinkles that I saw in that Oklahoma State game. Now, I've watched the game now probably four times and watched it tracking it actually twice. And I went back and tracked how often Texas was in what they call 40 personnel, either you're a 3-4 or three down linemen, four linebackers, or you're in a 4-3-4 down linemen with three linebackers. But only four defensive backs, usually when they call that 40 personnel. And Texas wasn't 40 personnel. Their base, which you never see these days, usually teams operate, their base usually ends up being nickel package with five DBs. It's some version of a 3-3-5 or a 4-2-5. But most of the game, Texas was in a 3-4, and I would say around 60%+ of the plays, they were in a 3-4 with four linebackers on the field. And I believe it was going up against Oklahoma State, it made sense. You know, on early downs, they're running the ball 69-70% of the time on first and second down. Now, they bucked that trend. They bucked that trend against Texas because I think they wanted to find some way to break tendency, and they threw it 57% of the time on first down in the first half and threw it 53% of the time on early downs in the first half. So they did try to change that up against Texas, but I don't think it worked that well. I think PK's defensive strategy actually early on worked pretty well before the dam collapsed in the fourth quarter when Texas was outgained 170-1 in the yardage department. So the adjustment, and I'm not saying that I love the adjustment. I like the adjustment because I'm all about coaches being problem solvers, and Texas rush defense was a problem. All right, their rush defense was one of the worst in the country, and it was one of the worst in the Big 12 other than Kansas. So he had to figure out a way to fortify the rush defense. And for him, he just figured, I'm going to put more specialized rush defenders in the game. That's why he went with the four linebackers in the game most of the time, situationally. Now, when he got into third and long situations, he would put the nickelback Anthony Cook on the field. My one critique of PK, because I was on the critique because I asked for adjustments and I saw adjustments. That was just one. I'll get to a couple of more too. But I saw adjustments. And what I'll say is I would rather Anthony Cook be on the field somewhere. When you go with your 4-DB package, when you go with your base personnel, when it's just 4 DBs on the field, I'd like Anthony Cook to be one of those DBs. I think this year, among your 5 top DBs, when you play nickel, he's been arguably your most consistent defensive back. So you got to find some place on the field for him, whether it's safety, because I know he works with the safeties because your nickel backs and your safeties work together, or put him at corner. He's a nickel, so I know he can cover. I'm not worried about him covering. He used to be a corner. So I know he can cover and use the sideline as his friend. I know he can tackle well. If I am going to go with that base personnel situation like PK did, and like I said, I really do. I compliment the adjustment. Put Anthony Cook on the field somewhere. He's earned it. And he'll make more plays on the field for you than, you know, your two safeties, Jaron Thompson or Schooler or Foster, or even at corner, more so than DeSean Jameson or Thompson. I will say DeSean Jameson had a good game. I thought DeSean Jameson had a good game. Could have had another pick. He was really close to getting 2 picks in that game. He got the 1 pick when Spencer Sanders was a little off trying to throw the curl route. That was another, I think it was a hitch out route, and he closes on it. And you can see after the play, he gives the wide receiver the Dikembe Mutombo finger wag. Because he sees, he's like, ooh, man, if I'd have jumped a little quicker, I probably would be taking that to the house. So I like the way DeSean Jameson played. He was aggressive, and he played confident in that game. Josh Thompson, not so much. Still saw Josh Thompson give up some plays. He had to pass interference, which is better than giving up a deep ball. But remember the first play of the game, Tay Martin goes by him, and I thought it was a good throw. Tay Martin dives for it, but probably should end up catching it, and didn't come down with it in the end. So I think Josh Thompson can be a little bit more consistent. Because of that, though, one of those corners, if you're going to go with 40 personnel in base, put Anthony Cook at one of those corners. One of the other adjustments by PK, and especially going up against a run-oriented offense like Oklahoma State, you know they want to run the ball with Jaylen Warren. Hell, now Jaylen Warren has carried the ball in the last 4 games. I believe he has carried the ball 'cause he had it 33 times in this game. So I believe he is up to like 129 carries or something like that in the last 4 games. It is some freaky number. All right. Freaky number. And that's a lot of carries for a college back. Remember Gary Patterson saying, I would never give his back as many carries as Bijan got versus TCU. And what did Bijan have, 34, 35 in that game? Sometimes, yes, it is what it is. You got to ride the hot hand. But getting back to PK, the reason that I think Longhorn fans want to see him play more single high safeties, and what I mean by that is put more defenders into the box. That's because Texas was getting gashed in the run game. And one of the easiest fixes, or at least one of the common solutions to getting gashed in the run game, is, hey, man, let's just put another defender in the box. And PK had been going with this, the two high safety look, which out of two high, usually that's when you get your cover fours, you get your cover twos, you can go man under, two man under with two safeties over the top there. A lot of different coverage you can go. You go single high, usually that means you're going man or you're going cover three. For the first time that I can recall, and I haven't tracked every game, and I will go back and track it, but just going off the eye test, for the first time, PK played as much, if not more, single high safety in this game versus Oklahoma State than he played with two high safeties. So that's another adjustment. He was getting a defender down into the box a ton more in this game. So they played a lot more cover one and a lot more cover three. And I even saw some of the really funky, creative concepts that, you know, made me fall in love with PK when I was studying him and his time at Washington at Boise State. There's a third and eight in the third quarter, I believe 14:05 left. Go check that out if you want to look at it. And there's a third and nine at the second quarter, I believe 1:12 left in the game. And at those times, those third downs, he plays a really cool combo coverage. Some people call it cover six. I've had old school coaches call it 42 or 24, old school, which is combo coverage. They're playing cover four to one side, cover two to one side. All right, you're going to play a safety deep playing cover two, which is a half of the field. It's his responsibility on the boundary side and on the wide side of the field. On the field side, they'll play cover four, two safeties. Well, one deep safety playing a quarter and one corner playing a quarter. And they did this, but he threw a little funky spin on it, which I like. They did this against Oklahoma State, except they would put Anthony Cook as the nickel. He would play inside, right? He's the slot corner. And so he would be aligned to the wide side of the field on that slot. And at the snap, he would bolt. He would just, at the snap, he would sprint to the deep quarter to take his quarter of the field. And the corner on that side also would take the deep quarter. Ends up turning into a man coverage for him because he ends up having only one responsibility out there. So at times, it ends up turning into a man coverage for him, especially with the quick game. But then on the opposite side, which was kind of cool, they had B.J. Foster playing outside cornerback, and he was playing off, maybe 7 yards off the wide receiver. DeSean Jameson playing in the slot, and DeSean Jameson at the snap would drop back to the hook curl to play like the inside, almost inside defender of the cover two, and then B.J. Foster would come down and play the flat on the cover two. And then Colin Schooler, or whoever the deep safety was, would rotate at the snap to the deep half on the side of DeSean Jameson and B.J. Foster. I mean, it's elaborate and exotic. And, yeah, it's pretty simple when you just break it down. It's just a combo coverage, four to one side, two to the other, two to the boundary, four to the field. But when you move around the pieces, like DeSean Jameson inside, trust me, the quarterback's eyes, I'm sure, perk up. He starts thinking, and then man coverage, is DeSean Jameson shadowing a defender? Or, and then when you have a different disguise look pre-snap and then at post-snap, everything shifts for the quarterback, man. That is just, it's brutal. It's a brutal pre-snap read because you have, and they did a twist and a stunt up front too. So you got seconds to try to clarify what you saw pre-snap, then to realize you misidentified it, and then to try to figure out exactly what the coverage is. And Spencer Sanders, on both of those, I believe he just ends up throwing it away. Ends up being an incompletion. So PK is starting to get a little bit more comfortable. I think he's realizing, I got to give these guys a schematic advantage. I can't sit back and expect them to win one-on-ones. And I think early on, he expected his players, defensive line, defensive backs, corners, to be able to win one-on-ones. Oh, they can win one-on-ones and we'll be okay. Nope, they don't. They can't win one-on-ones consistently. You must give them a schematic advantage. And based on the situation and the circumstance, the down and the distance, you're going to have to decide who to protect. You can't protect all positions all the time. All right? If it's a passing down, you might want to give the corner some help. If it's a rundown, you might want to help out the defensive front. You got to choose how you want to solidify the defense, because you can't really reinforce, right, all these different positions at one time and support them. You're going to have to allow somebody to win a one-on-one on any given down, depending on what the situation is. So those are just a couple of – and he also made some personnel adjustments, right? You saw more linebackers. Jalen Ford had a hell of a game, especially when Demo got injured. He stepped up, so a lot of fans want to see more Jalen Ford. I do too. Also, I saw more Chris Adamora in the game. A lot of folks been clamoring for more Adam Morris, some changes in the secondary. You saw that too. Alfred Collins played more, and he needs to play even more. I think that defensive front, Alfred Collins has got to be a mainstay on it. He's actually one of the guys who's not – he needs more snaps. And I think he will start getting more snaps now that they have the injury situation, Jacoby Jones. But Ojemo and Tavondre Sweat and Colburn and Collins, those are your best guys on the front. And I think now through 7 games, we have a proper sample size. Those are your difference makers on the defensive line. You probably shouldn't be rotating too much outside of that, because it's going to be a significant drop-off. All right, we got to get to the break. We'll come back. We'll get into some other news, notes, and nuggets. Also, we'll talk some Big 12 football a little bit. Look around the Big 12 on the other side. All that and more right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to RBKD. Hey, listen, folks, well, we're wrong. We're willing to admit it on the air. All right, I was mistaken. Snoop Dogg is 50 years old. Yes, he is. He's celebrating a birthday today, so happy birthday to my man Snoop Dogg. And yes, he is a part of the Super Bowl halftime show for the 2022 Super Bowl. But I claim that Snoop Dogg wasn't making albums anymore and he was just doing features. I couldn't have been more wrong. All right, we had a member of our listenership that texted the Specs text on or tweeted at us, one of them, and said, "Oh, guys, you guys are so wrong. Snoop Dogg is making out. He's prolific as ever." And then my man John looked it up. Snoop Dogg's been making an album basically every year. He's made a new album every year.
Sometimes two a year.
Sometimes two a year. Makes a collabo and then a solo album. Since 2015, like he took a break from... And I don't know if he ever took a break. I take it back. He's never really taken a true break from rap.
Except from 2020.
Well, COVID.
COVID. He had to take a break.
When everybody else was stuck making music, he took
a
break.
He stopped.
But yeah, let's just start from, because I'm amazed by this, 2011. I saw him in 2011, because I know he's still making, but 2011 he made the Dogumentary. In 2013 he made Reincarnated. He made Bush in 2015. But before that, he also made a collabo, 7 Days of Funk with 7 Days of Funk, and also a Royal Fam with the Brodus Boys. I have no idea what that is.
Mac and Devin Go to High School. Don't forget about that. As okay. Well as 7 Days of Instrumentals.
Yeah, see, so that's in 2013 around there, so he's getting really busy. 2015, he made Bush. 2016, he made Kool-Aid. Also made Cousins with his cousin, Daz Dillinger. That was a collabo album. 2017 made Never Left. 2018 Bible of Love. 2019 I Want to Thank Me. Skip 2020, as John said, and then 2021 from the Streets to the Suites was his latest album in 2021.
That's at least one album per year.
Wow, he's prolific. I'll say that.
He's something.
I have not heard any songs off of these albums.
I haven't either. I looked into it.
I haven't heard any of these. So I'll plead ignorant. I didn't even know he's still making albums. Who knew? I don't know where he releases his music then. I didn't see it on Apple, but I could have been mistaken.
The only song I really know is Young, Wild, and Free, which is, that's a good song.
It's a good song?
That's one song.
Is that on 2021?
That
from
was
Streets to the Suites?
No. Okay. That was from Mac Kool-Aid? And Devin Go to High School. Music from and inspired by the movie.
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg.
Okay. Well, you know what? He probably still making money off the albums.
He has to
be. Is. Yeah. It's like that play the producers. They prove you can make money off a flop. That's Snoop Dogg's latest. It's probably his last 5 to 6 albums. But you can still make money off it.
You mean to tell me that Snoop Dogg Presents Bible of Love wasn't a smash hit?
I didn't even know he was making music. So shout out to Snoop Dogg, man. Okay, I guarantee you he's not going to sing any of that at the Super Bowl halftime show. He'll sing only music he made prior to 2008.
Yeah, I was going to say nine. Yeah, eight.
Yeah, that's a weird to say, bro. I'm like, after that, I don't know about Snoop Dogg after that. So kind of still goes with my theory about 50-year-old rappers. I think around 40, they peak. There are still some great rappers that are, like, I think the best old rappers now are probably Lil Wayne, like J. Cole is still really good. And those guys are old. They're like 36.
Sure.
They're approaching 40, but they're still, it's still got some fire, a ton of it. So there's some old rappers that can still, you know, hold their own. But most of them kind of fade.
Or they go into like a producer role.
Or they, exactly. They bring
up the next generation of rappers. Yeah,
that's a great point. I totally agree with that too. We'll see. There you go. My man Snoop Dogg still making music. I apologize. I was incorrect.
I will be screening some of the new Snoop Dogg music. Maybe we'll play Talk With Your Booty later.
That might be good. Yeah, maybe some new Snoop Dogg.
Maybe.
It's hard to find the clean versions of the new Snoop Dogg, though.
Yeah.
The clean version of all the popular songs. I don't know if you find the clean version of Talk With Your Booty. That might not work. But I'm interested. I want to hear it. I want to hear some new Snoop Dogg now and see if it's still pretty good. All right, there you go. On a way back Rap Wednesday, who knew that Snoop Dogg was still getting it done? Shout out to my man, Snoop Dogg. All right, we'll get to some more conversation, a little off-the-record stuff coming up later on. As a matter of fact, we do have a hip-hop connection with an off-the-record story. Apparently, a hip-hop star gave a professional athlete the bubble guts. So his hometown team. Yeah. Some bad stuff. So we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. We'll do that at 4:45. 5:45, we're going to have some fun with an anniversary. A great sports anniversary that you may not know of, but we'll celebrate it together. That's going to be fun. On the other side, we'll get into those Big 12 midseason awards. Apparently, the Associated Press having given out some Big 12 midseason awards. We'll get into that. There's also the beef going on right now between Cowboys fans and Pro Football Focus. Pro Football Focus has got some intriguing data and scores on Trevon Diggs, and Cowboys fans are not they're not trying to hear it at all. they're not here for the Trevon Diggs hate at all, or any stats that really demean Trevon Diggs' greatness at this time, and he has been fantastic. But Pro Football Focus has some less than complimentary stats about Trevon Diggs. Cowboys fans don't want to hear it. All right, so we'll get into that beef coming up a little bit later on, and also talk Cowboys, all of that and more right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9 101.9 and AM 1260.